Hi, and welcome to The Foxhole, a show that brings you insights into hot topics, lifestyle design tips, and tactics for success.
So, it's so terrible what happened on that Southwest flight.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw the article that I sent you, the New York Post article, but I was reading it, and this guy who was, like, posting these pictures on his Facebook basically said that this woman was, like, being sucked out of the window.
Yeah.
And, you know, the passengers had to, like, you know, her fellow flyers had to come and pull her back in.
This was exactly my fear. This is exactly the thing that was in my mind when I was watching this guy bumble around the cabin. I was like, this dude is going to pull a switch that's going to result in me getting sucked out of this airplane, you know, and he'll probably be fine.
Well, it happened. And it wasn't because someone had a switch in this particular case.
So what the engine just exploded. It took out a window and then the woman almost got sucked out of the plane.
Do you think that people are not going to want the window seat anymore after this? I've never been a window seat kind of gal myself.
Really?
For that aisle. Because if I need to get out, I want to be in a place to get out. I want to crawl over two people to get out.
Yeah. The worst thing about the window seat is when you've got other people in the row who are like craning or like leaning over you or looking over, trying to get a glimpse out the window. And there's something deeply satisfying about like rolling the shade down.
That is not nice, Michael. I'm like, I am one of those people. I want to see out the window, but I don't want to be next to the window.
I don't think it's fair that one person gets to control it. This is another one of those things where it's like a lot of power is really concentrated into the hands of the window seat person because they determine whether everybody else in the whole row gets to see out of the window.
But they'll also be the last one off.
Yeah.
Out of that row.
Yeah. Air travel is the worst. That's my favorite thing to do. That's like when I'm sitting in the aisle, I try to like be spring loaded in such a way that as soon as that, like you get to the gate and like the ding happens, that signals that it's okay to stand up and start unloading your stuff. I jump into the aisle and shoot to the front of the plane. Like as soon as that ding, it may as well be like a racer's gun.
Oh, you don't wait your turn?
No, because the thing is, there's a moment, there's a fleeting moment where you hear ding, and then you've got a good 3 or 4 seconds, like there's a moment, and if you're quick about it, you can dart to the front of the plane. The other part of this is you have to travel lightly or have quick access. Like I always try to make sure that my carry-on is in front of me, like between me and the gate. And then as soon as that ding happens, or maybe even a little bit before, like if I'm anticipating the ding, like I know, all right, we're here, we're parked, like it's going to happen any moment now. Like I'll leap out, grab my bag and run to the front before the aisles get really crowded. And I usually get pretty close to the front of the plane.
But you couldn't do that if you were in the window seat.
No, you can't. You can't. Which is another reason to sit like on the aisle. A weird thing to me though is like how you pay, like the more you pay, the earlier you get to get onto the plane. Who considers that to be a luxury?
I wonder who those people are.
The only downside to getting onto the plane after everybody else is that there's no room left in the overhead compartment, which is the absolute worst for flights. Like, especially when people do this thing where like they'll have, oh, I'm sitting like in row 22, but people put their bag in like the front of the plane. Like they'll start putting their stuff up front. Like people don't always put a bag close to where they're sitting. So if you get onto like a Southwest flight or one of those things where there's not assigned seating and you're one of the last ones to board, it's so difficult to get your bag into an overhead compartment.
You don't want to be in the seat on Southwest if you have a carry-on. But the only benefit to getting on the plane earlier besides that would be if you're in first class, because they usually offer you a cocktail or a drink like right when you get on.
Yeah, but still, like you will also be offered that same thing as soon as you're up at altitude or whatever.
Yeah, but you know, that could be, you know, 30 minutes to an hour depending on how long you're taxiing.
I just don't think, for me, it's like the luxury would be to spend the least amount of time on the plane. Like that to me is like if I were expecting a luxury experience, if I were paying a premium for a luxury experience when it comes to air travel, like to me that would include spending as little time as possible on a plane. I guess you could, you know, if you wanted to get on and get situated and all of that.
And another exception, of course, is when first class is in the front so that the passengers don't walk by.
Yeah.
Because then you can get settled and you also don't have to sit there while everyone's walking by and you can have your drink.
So did they say what caused the engine to explode? Was it like it hit something or did it just randomly explode?
Not yet. It's going to probably be under investigation for a while. Mm. Yeah. You know how that goes. Speaking of investigations, I was watching on the Elon Musk interview where he was talking about just what's going on with Tesla and their production line challenges on the news, which is interesting.
Yeah.
It was very human of him to be on the news, like talking like that, I felt like.
I didn't see the interview. Was it?
I got to send it to you. It was just like a regular news station.
I think I saw some pull quotes from it about how they erred too much on the side of like automation, which was causing some of their production issues, and they want to dial up human work a little bit more, and that's cool.
Yeah. Tesla released information about that last accident that happened up north that we were talking about, the autopilot accident.
Yeah.
And basically said that the driver had been given several warnings to put its hands on the wheel and to like basically pay attention.
Yeah.
And that when the crash occurred, his hands were not on the wheel.
Mm.
Anyway, so the Department of Transportation was upset that he released information before they got to finish their investigation.
And they were upset that Tesla released this information before they did?
They didn't want anything released until their investigation was complete. And Tesla's like, we're not waiting a year. Like, absolutely not.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with everything going on, you know,
yeah,
be so detrimental to them. It's better they just like get something out there.
It could just be because I follow Zero Hedge on Twitter, but I feel like there's so much anti-Tesla propaganda. But I feel like they're going to be just fine and do super well.
Oh, for sure.
Didn't you say in that same interview that they're expecting to be pushing Model 3s out? Like they're going to like 2x or 4x the production output of their Model 3 lines in like the third quarter or something along those lines?
Yeah, he discusses exactly what the production is like today and then how he expects that to be stable. So it all sounds positive.
Yeah. He also said they're going to be profitable in, I think, their third or fourth quarter this year.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And the interviewer asks him about the April Fool's joke.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, why? It was a lady interviewing him.
Oh,
she
yeah.
was like, why would you... And he's like, people need to lighten up.
He's like, lighten up, yeah.
I was like so excited best. That he said totally. That, because we do live in such a hypersensitive society.
Seriously.
It's like, yes.
Yeah, it's a joke.
It's a joke, people.
Yeah. Good for him.
So today's tax day.
Yeah.
Are you excited?
Always. It's always nice to be a good citizen and contribute your fair share back to what's going on here.
I was, I came across the article about the IRS tax payment site being down.
Yeah.
And, which, by the way, the site is still down.
Oh, my gosh.
They're working to resolve the issue.
Yeah.
And, of course, if it doesn't, like, come up by midnight tonight, you know, they can't penalize all these people that didn't get to pay today, right?
Oh, yeah, you would think so.
But when I was going through the Zero Hedge article, I saw the next one down that was like posted on back in August, and it said from the Treasury Inspector General for the Tax Administration.
It's like don't wait till the last minute.
No. Oh. It says the Internal Revenue Service does not have a cloud strategy and did not adhere to federal policy when deploying a cloud service.
Yeah.
And just like, oh, these people, you know, it goes back to like when we talk about like the lawmakers and who's going to make regulation.
Yeah.
Do they have the intelligence or history experience to do so?
Yeah, it's so tough.
You know, here's this like major agency.
Yeah.
And they, you know what I mean?
The one that probably matters the most to the continued existence of the government itself, of the federal government, right? Like if you can't collect taxes, that's a big problem for any government. So it's like you would think that the infrastructure around tax collection and payments would be really solid in a way that like hurricane prevention or hurricane like disaster responses might not be.
Yeah. So that was fun. But the other fun thing that happened in the news today, I've got two more. This is one. So Stormy Daniels releases a sketch of a man who allegedly threatened her. Okay. So we talked about Stormy Daniels before, right? And how she was in the parking lot. And so supposedly this man threatened her to, you know, not expose her affair with Trump, and it was a thing. Okay, so now a sketch is released, and the internet is all abuzz with this sketch, and how shall we say, the sketch looks like America's sweetheart football player, Tom Brady.
Tom Brady. Right.
And so there's all of these memes and all these different things going around, you know. We found him. And it's just hilarious. I mean, everyone loves him, you know, so well, yeah. Not everyone, but he's fairly loved, and
yeah,
it, which just makes it even more hilarious.
I'm sure we'll link to a few of those from the show notes then.
Yeah, we have to. Okay, and then finally, you know, it depends on the platform and who does a good job of doing what, right? And we love, like, all the tools and all the fun things that are out there, but I've been going on YouTube. Twitter's like my favorite to look up just like what's trending and what's going on. I think they do a good job of compartmentalizing all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been going on YouTube semi-regularly just to kind of see like what's trending and what's going on. And
yeah,
I've been supremely, supremely disappointed in the results.
Oh, no.
It took me an hour to go through... and I'll give my context as to why, but it took me an hour to go through just kind of like everything it wanted to share with me today. And then there really, like, it ended. Like, there was like nothing else after that. Like, I couldn't scroll anymore. And the thing I loved the most was this clip with Conan, you know, in Naples having espresso.
Yeah.
And you have to watch this. It really is hilarious.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous, but hilarious. And I laughed out loud, literally. But that was it. And everything else was like,
So you're just going to like your homepage, like the initial screen that they show you, or is there like a For You type video section that they give you?
Yeah, it's not for me. It's just everything that's trending. I'll tell you exactly.
And it's like, and they're showing you the global trending guy. Like, this is what is trending for everyone. Like, everybody sees the same trending list, or?
Yeah. Like, if you pull up the YouTube app on your phone and you click on trending, it's everything. And you can actually choose, like, at the very top, it gives you the option if you want to choose music or gaming or movies to see what's trending within industry.
Yeah.
But I just have like the global one on where I'm just seeing like everything that's trending, period.
So I see a Japanese take on American sushi is my top. Okay.
That's the top one. But look at the next one, like this Tanner Fox guy. Like, who is this guy?
Right.
And all he's doing is talking about this house that I think like they're trying to buy or something and how cool it is in Temecula.
None of this, I can't say that any of these things appeals to me.
It's terrible. Who is watching this garbage?
But this is it, huh? This is like the...
This is it.
People say that YouTubers
react to Walmart Yodel. I mean, you have a bunch of people doing dumb stuff.
Right.
You have a bunch of people doing meaningless acts, and these videos are getting hundreds of thousands of millions of views.
When people talk about like, because YouTube is really has enormous, I don't know if mind share is the right word, like an enormous amount of the time that is spent humaning on YouTube. So it's like this, I think for many people, has replaced television. I know that like kids, I hear adults talking about their kids just being on YouTube all the time.
You know, the one video that, besides the Conan one that I just got a great laugh from, the other one I found a little interesting, and not because she's interesting necessarily, was this girl whose name is Tati, and she talks about product regrets. And in the middle of, or at the very beginning, I guess, of her 13-minute and 29-second video, she talks about how her YouTube subscribers couldn't find her and her content was not coming up and the bell, like you have to hit the bell. But she, you know, she just basically was venting, kindly venting about the same things that, you know, we've been talking about so often and why it's so important for you to have your own independent online presence, because YouTube made a change.
And then
caused a chain reaction where her information wasn't being shown to her subscribers.
Yeah, that's so brutal. That's so brutal.
And so, anyways, I guess YouTube has this new bell button.
Oh.
you have to now not just subscribe, but you also have to hit the bell.
Oh my gosh.
That's how you'll get your content you want to see.
Very interesting. There's this, when it comes to like the content element of it and what gets promoted and trending and all of that stuff, there's this great Steve Jobs quote when he says, when you're young, you look at television and think there's a conspiracy. The networks have conspired to dumb us down. But when you get a little older, you realize that's not true. The networks are in business to give people exactly what they want. That's a far more depressing thought. Conspiracy is optimistic. You can shoot the bastards. We can have a revolution. But the networks are really in business to give people what they want. It's the truth.
Wow. That quote just defines exactly why I was depressed.
Yeah, it is. You look out. Yep. Tell me about it. I mean, this dude, it's crazy how they keep dredging up quotes from Steve Jobs about just everything from technology to product to design and privacy and all of this stuff, and how relevant it still is today. I mean, you can find, it's amazing. One of my favorite things is to find these like really, really old Steve Jobs. Like he'll do like lectures or appearances or whatever. And this is stuff from, I mean, I find videos from the 80s, right? Where this is before really good internet, mobile devices, like all of this stuff. And Steve's talking about a lot of the things that we have today. He's just so prescient. So prescient. But yeah, I mean, it is... I think it's going to be depressing. I mean, if you looked at what the sort of zeitgeist is nowadays, like what people are, the majority of people are consuming, I think it would be pretty depressing.
Okay, so email marketing is something everyone is familiar with, but I'm going to ask you to define it for me in a second. But it's something that is a great marketing strategy and a lot of companies use, and something that small business owners and people who can't afford a big digital ad agency need information on. And you, my friend, are an expert on that. Can you tell us a little bit about email marketing, what it is for those who don't know, living under a rock, and what's effective for you?
Sure. I mean, at the root of it, email marketing is really just emailing people to tell them about a product or service you have available. It's one of my favorite ways to acquire customers and to sort of get the word out, because it starts a direct conversation with people. It's much more direct and personalized than something more passive than, or like internet advertising or billboards or other ways that you can kind of get the word out there. Mm. Generally what it looks like is you get a list of people, like a list of email addresses, that you want to solicit, and you just send them emails. And people approach it all kinds of different ways. There are some best practices that we can kind of share from a high level. But really, fundamentally, it's very simple. It's just emailing people to let them know what you're up to. I think that it would probably be helpful to maybe like use an example business to kind of walk through like how I would actually approach this if I were going to do it today. And in the past, I've done a lot of work mostly as a consultant, but for marketing agencies, digital agencies that do things like build apps and websites on behalf of their clients. And so we could pretend that like, okay, I'm going to start a web design business here in Santa Monica. And what I want to do is get the word out there and advertise to people that this is, you know, I'm here and I'm able to do this now. And so email marketing might be a great way to do that. And the first step would be to really determine who it is that is going to be receptive to your product, like who has a problem that you're trying to solve and who is most readily going to be able to pay for that, engage your services, and do a good job with it. And so the bulk of the valuable work that you can do when it comes to email marketing is not so much in even writing the emails or the logistics and mechanics behind sending them, but getting really high quality lists of people to send information to. When I say high quality, what I'm really kind of thinking about here is that you want to have, so everybody wants to feel special. Everybody wants to feel like their needs and concerns and challenges are recognized, appreciated, and it's so important to respect that in this kind of marketing strategy. And so the thing that you want to do is have small lists. You can have many small lists. Like I'm talking about maybe on the hundreds of email addresses, hundreds of people per list. But each list is a very highly targeted or segmented group of businesses. So if I were going to start a web agency, I would think about my market here in Santa Monica. There are all kinds of businesses that could hire you to build them a website. You could have a large law firm could need a website, all the way down to the local poke shop who needs a little website so people can look up information on them. And those two businesses are going to have very different needs in terms of how the website should look, how much money they're willing to spend on it, how important it's going to be to the longevity of their business and strength of their business. And so you would start to break your market, your addressable market, up into little groups of similar businesses and similar people so that you can, as you're writing to them, talk to them very directly about their specific challenges and how your product or service is going to fix their specific issues. So getting lists together is really, really important, and making sure that everybody that is on that list is a highly qualified, like this is somebody who definitely would want to hear about what we're up to.
So do you actually go through, if you have 1,000 email addresses in all of those companies, how do you sort of condense that process, or is it even possible?
Yeah, I mean, the more that you can, the better it's going to be.
So investing that time is really worth it,
it's critical. You're going to get a much higher percentage of conversions if you do the work ahead of time to make sure that your list is really good, because you can go out there and buy email lists. I think that there are markets for like, oh, buy an email list of people who are in law. But the problem is not everybody on those lists. I mean, you don't know the quality of those lists, period. But like once you do get a hold of something like that, it's still so important to go through. And I do this line by line in a lot of cases until I can figure out a way to sort of automate it through software, which I'm very good at. But yeah, you want to look at each entry on a list like that and determine, you know, does this person, you know, if I was building this web design business, I would look at it and say, do they currently have a website? If they don't have a website at all, that would be somebody who would go into one bucket, like one list for me. If there's somebody who has a website, but it looks bad and could be improved, that would be like another bucket because those are two different groups of businesses that have very different problems. You would email one about, hey, you need a website, and you would email the other one about, hey, a better website is going to be beneficial to your business for X, Y, and Z reasons. So it's really important to just sort of like identify attributes that you can segment your addressable market by. So again, this business, like you could segment this business by, do they have websites? Do they not have websites? That's a great way to kind of separate a group into smaller groups. And then you want to be able to, each of these groups that you kind of create should have a set of unique circumstances and needs that you can then speak to in your emails to them. And that's where that idea of personalization comes in, is that it's personalized to that person's challenges.
Okay, so now you've made your list. As far as like a process goes, you've made your list. You've determined which set of customers belong in which bucket so that you can write your emails for that specific targeted audience. What's the next step in the process?
So then you want to write your emails. Generally, the way that this works is that you need to send people multiple emails. In email marketing and in advertising, the data, like the science behind it, shows that people don't react or respond to marketing messages until they've been hit by a given message about 7 times. So you need to see an ad for Colgate 7 times or so before it really begins to register and get into your head. And email marketing is kind of similar, because when you're kind of cold emailing somebody, most people take the time to read a message, but they won't respond to it unless you've really hit a nerve with them. And so you need to communicate the benefits, all the benefits of your product and service to people, And you can't do it in one email. A sort of rookie mistake that people make when they try to do email marketing is to type up like several paragraphs about their product and service and their history and their team and a whole bunch of information that nobody wants to read. Nobody who's running a small business has time to sit down and read a cold email that's novel length about your thing that they might be able to use.
Okay, so you recommend really short emails.
Super short, concise, like single idea, bite-sized emails. And you want to communicate the whole range of benefits that your product or service might have for a specific group of your addressable market. And you want to send all of that over the course of like, you want to be able to like, you type up, I would say between 8 and 12 emails that break down all those big ideas, all those features and benefits into small bite-sized ones. And then you basically want to schedule this those emails to be sent to everybody on that list. And you want it to be spaced. Like you want each email to be sent to them with at least a few days in between. So email one might go out on like Monday. Email two might go out on Wednesday or Thursday and so on and so forth until you get all the way through all of the emails that you typed up for this given campaign.
So for the frequency, you're recommending multiple times in a week. What's the maximum of length of time that could go by before you send your second email?
I wouldn't do fewer than 3 days, and I wouldn't do more than like a week. So anywhere between 3 and 7 days is a good amount of time to like go by between sending emails. And then obviously if they respond to an email, you want to then transition it into a back and forth conversation. And you don't want to keep sending emails after they've responded. There are a lot of apps and services out there that help you with this. My favorite is one called Mailshake, MailShake.com, Mailshake.com. And it's amazing because what it allows you to do is connect your Gmail account and then it can automatically schedule and send emails for you. So you don't even have to think about it. All you got to do is upload your list, type up the emails, and then it takes care of the rest for you. And then if somebody responds to one of your emails, it stops sending them subsequent emails in that campaign, which is pretty important. But it's been an amazing way to start conversations. I've closed a ton of business this way. In fact, I think our email marketing is like our number one customer acquisition channel with our own SaaS businesses. And it's really great. It's really great. There's a lot of really awesome information out there. We'll link to some webinars and to some articles and things that I've read and found useful in the past in our show notes. But among the like 19, 20 customer acquisition channels that are out there for businesses, email marketing is one of my favorites.
Okay. So I just want to make sure we've covered everything. So as far as like your process goes, you started with making a list, separate audiences with thoughtfulness to make them as personal as possible, write up 8 to 12 emails for each given audience, right?
Yep.
And these are going to be single idea bite-sized emails, short.
Yeah.
With the main message being the features and benefits of your thing, as we'll call it. Frequency, a minimum of 3 days apart, maximum of 7 days apart.
Yeah.
For that specific email campaign. And stop sending emails once they've responded or reacted to an email.
Yeah, you'll get... Because the idea is that if you have 8 different benefits, let's say you're doing a campaign, you have 8 emails, 8 different features and benefits you're going to send to somebody. Chances are, if you've done the work correctly in that first step, which is to generate a list of people who really do need your thing, one of those ideas is going to hit on a nerve.
So knowing your audience as a first step seems to be so important in having critical. A lot of success in implementing this process. You know, this is really cool. The whole idea of email marketing, especially for someone who does not do marketing or a small business who's like got so much going on already.
Yeah.
To try to tackle something new. This seems so simple. Or, you've made this process, this breakdown, so easy to understand.
It's so simple. And the nice thing about it, too, is that you don't have to be Don Draper to do a good job with this. Like, it's you need to just have and I kind of suggest this whenever I do marketing copy or sales stuff. Like, it's so easy to come off as a salesperson, or to get into a zone where it feels inauthentic is so, so easy. And I feel like as soon as you do that, even if you get the sale, you have lessened your brand. I don't like inauthentic interactions. And the thing about email marketing is the tone that you should take and the way that you should communicate and what works best with it is a conversational tone, the same way that you would send an email to a friend. You know, if you and your friend were both in the same industry, and you were like, hey, I found this really cool product, or hey, here's a great solution to that problem. The way that you would package and communicate that to a friend of yours is the same way you should communicate that to your customers. Like as soon as you start doing things like adding excessive punctuation or you're bolding things or you're typing out like buzzwords or anything like that, that feels salesy or that you're doing because you think that like, this is how like ad people talk, or this is how like good marketing looks or reads or whatever. This is how Apple writes or whatever. It becomes inauthentic and you lose the sort of personal touch to it. And I think that's really part of the secret of the email marketing thing is that it feels just like, hey, you know, here's a little tip for you, you know, and less like here's an advertisement.
Oh, wow. That's great advice. I never would have guessed that. You would think like the exclamation points and the bolding would like get their attention, but you're kind of doing the opposite.
You would think so. It's a turnoff because then you feel like, ugh, this is just like a, you know, this is just a marketing message, you know, like if you were going to send a friend, if you were to give a friend a movie suggestion, you know, like you wouldn't write them a movie review, or you wouldn't write them like the marketing copy you see in a trailer or in a newspaper. You would just say, hey, I saw this movie and it was hilarious. You should go check it out. That doesn't sound like a marketing message or a sales message at all, but that's going to be the thing that activates that person because it's a personalized message. So I'm always, whenever I do sales calls, whenever I do emails like this, I always try to approach it like I'm talking to a friend of mine and not like some new customer, new prospect that I'm trying to like sales into liking me.
Now, what about the content within the email? Do you... You know, what do you recommend as far as the aesthetics, like pictures? Are you using imagery?
No, or absolutely not.
None of that.
Absolutely not. No images, no nothing. Because as soon as you start to add any formatting or images or any of that stuff, it doesn't feel like a text message or an SMS or a quick chat to a friend. It feels like an advertisement. You know, I just always try to keep it conversational. I always try to keep it conversational and simple. When it comes to like what I actually type into those emails, it's usually just one or two sentences. A, you have this problem. B, our thing fixes that. Would love to chat with you more. Hit reply if you have any questions or can we get on a call, like that kind of thing.
I love that. A, you have this problem. B, we have a solution.
Yeah, that's it. You don't have to dress it up. You don't have to, you know, it's super simple. And also think about it from the perspective of being a small business owner. I don't want to sit there and read stuff. I get so much spam. I get so much junk.
Oh my gosh, don't we all?
You know, and you can immediately like your pattern recognition of like, oh, this is spam or this is an advertisement versus, oh, this is like a good tip or like a very simple, you know, like a very personalized, it feels like a very personalized message. I mean, it's kind of funny. Like I get people who, to me, it seems obvious that it's like a campaign. Like this is an automated system that's sending all these emails out. But I get a lot of responses from people who are like politely declining, but who do so as if they're responding to a human. You know, it's not like they're responding to like a spam list or something. They're like, hey, thanks so much for being persistent. I really appreciate that you're writing these emails to me, but I'm just not interested in the service or whatever, you know? So it's all about just feeling like it's a personal touch and that it's somebody who's reaching out to you with a solution because they care about your situation and your problems and less because they're like just trying to meet their sales quota.
Thanks for tuning in. For more information, head over to foxhole.fm. That's foxhole.fm. If you have any questions, please email us at feedback@foxhole.fm. And if you're enjoying what you hear, please leave us a great review on your favorite podcast platform or iTunes. Thanks again for listening.